is Civic Media, bringing you news, talk, and community-minded conversations all across Wisconsin. You can find us at civicmedia.us and download the app for free today. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cusco, sports director for Civic Media. Right now, we're airing a Packers, Badgers, Brewers, or Bucks game over the air, but due to our rights agreements, we're not able to stream those games here. Civic Media might be a newer company, but we are dedicated to providing the best in sports coverage. Our team has decades of experience covering sports right here in Wisconsin. We've got Mike Clemens, who covers our state's biggest teams on location and does daily updates on all of our Civic Media stations statewide. Many of our stations have local reporters dedicated to teams in their area, covering their community dozens or even hundreds of times each year. No matter where you're at in Wisconsin, we are committed to covering sports, especially in the communities that our stations serve. And we put all of our local coverage right here on our stream, so you can go ahead and grab the free Civic Media app so you never miss a game at civicmedia.us/app. You can find the game you're looking for over the air, or you can stay tuned right here on the stream for more news, talk, and conversation. Thank you for listening to Civic Media from all of us here on the sports team.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. It's now in the hands of the state Supreme Court. Wisconsin's highest judiciary will decide the fate of the state's 1849 abortion law. Here's Judith Ruiz Branch.
A circuit court determined last year that an 1849 law doesn't apply to medically consented abortions in Wisconsin. The high court heard arguments Monday about whether a 1985 state law overrides the older one, allowing abortions before the point at which a fetus could survive outside the womb. Jenny Higgins, professor of obstetrics and gynecology at the University of Wisconsin at Madison, says returning to the status quo would mean a dire landscape for abortion access.
Even though abortion is technically available at clinics in Wisconsin right now, it's heavily restricted because of insurance and Medicaid prohibitions. People have to pay out of pocket for a service that should be covered by insurance.
Abortion access disproportionately affects those who are already the most marginalized, Higgins says. She notes while people from all walks of life may find themselves needing abortion care, factors like poverty and racism make it much harder for some to achieve reproductive autonomy compared to those with more economic and social resources.
Those effects make it much harder for folks to be able to access contraceptive care, be in relationships that are stable and healthy and communicative, be able to see past the end of the day, right, into one's future, if you are, again, sort of focused mostly on your own economic scarcity or figuring out how to feed your kids or figuring out how not to get evicted.
For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Bucks host the Pacers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Milwaukee Bucks take on the Pacers tonight at Fiserv Forum. After a horrible start, the Bucks have won four of their last five, getting more points from Brook Lopez, head coach Doc Rivers.
It's funny, we were talking about Brook today, and I made the comment, you just can't ever lose faith in him because you know he can shoot the ball, and you know eventually it's going to happen. I come into the facility yesterday evening. I'm the only one in there. Brook was the only other guy in there shooting. It was a really cool thing just watching him shoot over and over and over again.
College football, the Badgers are off to Nebraska to play the Cornhuskers tomorrow, game time at 2:30. Sunday, it's the Packers and the 49ers at Lambeau Field. Tucker Kraft on losing in the playoffs last season to San Francisco.
Yeah, last year was a tough game because we had them beaten so many categories, and then we lose the game. So coming out this week and just trying to maximize every opportunity, that's going to be the main game plan.
That's Packers tight end Tucker Kraft. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
This Civic Media station is currently broadcasting the Packers, Badgers, Brewers, or Bucks over the air. Due to streaming restrictions, we can't provide you the broadcast here. You can find an affiliated station at civicmedia.us to find the game over the air. We'll also have updates on the game and the biggest sports news from Mike Clemens daily on Civic Media stations all across Wisconsin.
Lena Bloom for The Bail Project. Imagine you're stuck in a jail cell and you can't afford bail and someone offers you a way out. Just plead guilty and you can go home and kiss your kids goodnight. What do you do? What thousands have. You plead guilty whether you are or not. Cash bail makes poverty a crime. That's why the Bail Project helps those who can't afford it while fighting to end cash bail. Because freedom should be free.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Matt Nair on air.
And we are here with Matt Randolph, Mr. Global. Donald Trump now will be coming in for a second term. There has been talk of removing sanctions from Russia. What would that mean, Matt, for the oil and gas industry?
So it depends on what Russia does, but we've seen nothing to suggest that they want to have anything to do with lowering oil prices.
And so the prices are essentially going to stay the same?
In all likelihood, yes.
Matt Nair on air, weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Covering the games and biggest sports news. Listen daily to Mike Clemens on Civic Media.
Good morning. This is Sandy Williams, the Earl Ingram Show. Sam, sitting in for Earl today. Earl is otherwise predisposed, I guess. He can't be here today. Calvin, how are you this morning?
I'm doing pretty good, Earl. You know that the inclement weather we had yesterday disappeared awfully quickly.
It did, and winter came and left. It was like it just wanted to prove that it existed, and then it disappeared again. So Earl is gone this morning, and this is going to be an interesting segue. It might suggest why he's gone. But Kelvin, have you ever had a colonoscopy?
I can't say that I have.
Well, you know, it's a rite of passage. It's a rite of passage that's afforded to all of Americans through the benefit of Medicare or our health insurers. And it's a passage that announces that middle age onset is here, and now you need to get tested. And the colonoscopy process sounds awful. The preparation for it indeed is. I'm sure many listeners here have been through this process, but the procedure itself is like a non-process. I can confess that I had one of these things. I've had several of them, but the most recent one I had, I was sitting impatiently in the waiting room. And finally, I turned to the receptionist and I said, when are they going to do this procedure? And she said, oh, sir, they've done the procedure. You're just waiting for your ride home. So they have some magic anesthesia that kind of erases the whole process from your mind. So whatever it is that happens to you, who knows? But it comes and goes. But it is an announcement of middle age. And it's also interesting. It's a process in which the medical industry mines human beings. They're looking for things called polyps. And if they find a polyp in you, they can come back and do it again in 3 years or 5 years. But if they don't find a polyp, the insurance provisions don't allow them to come back for 10 years. And it's an amazingly expensive procedure. It's one of the reasons why American medical care is so expensive, because it costs almost as much, apparently, to have a colonoscopy as it does to have a baby. So, you know, I think a colonoscopy is an easier burden to carry, but anyway. So that's our friend Earl is in the process of heading on for one of those and can't be here today. I'm confident that he would rather be here today. Don't you think, Calvin?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, doing this radio show is definitely better than what they do to you during a colonoscopy.
Well, luckily he's hopefully will be asleep for what they're going to do to him this morning. But through the night probably was not a fun experience.
No, it's let's put it this way. The anticipation is much worse than the procedure. I'm sure there'll be some caller that might be willing to share the same kind of experience. So I sat up kind of stark a couple of nights ago in the middle of the night and suddenly realized that what we're watching happen right now with the Trump administration feels and looks much more like what used to happen and what does happen, I guess, but what really used to happen with a king as they assembled their court. And so I went back and looked at some of the history. For instance, King George III. King George III was the king of England in 1776. He was the very king that the revolution was aimed at. And King George had a court, and the court was a mix of family figures, political figures, wealthy noble people. And the main thing that was expected of the court was that they be absolutely loyal to the king. And royal courtiers, as they were called, many of them, some of them became the officials of government. So the exchequer and the various positions of government were filled out of this group of courtiers. But the courtiers were mainly expected to be totally loyal to the king, and they would fall out of favor and their status would be diminished at large and on the court if there was any act of disloyalty or any perceived act of disloyalty. In fact, you know, for some kings, Henry VIII, for instance, was wont to lop off the heads of those who were disloyal. And same was true of Louis XVI in France. Louis's conduct with his court was so outlandish that it probably, in some respects, led to the French Revolution. But we can look at history, and we can find these episodes in history, but in which extreme loyalty is required, personal loyalty is required to the leader. And typically, it's in environments that we as Americans were found so repellent that we fled those countries and came here. England had another period of time, which kind of smacks a little bit of the current, and that was the period of Oliver Cromwell. So Cromwell lived in England. I think anyone who studied English history at all has heard of Oliver Cromwell. He led England from 1649 to 1660. He unseated the kings, but it wasn't like he was unseating the kings to create a democratic movement. He was unseating the kings because they were the establishment, and he was an anti-establishment figure who ran against, who basically had a movement that was based on being against the then establishment, which was the Catholic Church. And he installed a government that was based on a Puritan morality. And there was an effort to infuse the laws of England with Puritanical liturgical law. There began to be an upwelling against that to some extent. And so then Cromwell decided that he would dissolve Parliament, which was then in existence. And he became what was called the Lord Protector. And I would simply urge us all to be concerned about whether or not we ever have a leader who seems to be wanting to become the Lord Protector. But Cromwell was a period that ended up being a period of ruthless execution of opposition. It was a period of military tribunals, imprisonment for disloyalty. Loyalty to Cromwell was absolutely central. And it was the beginning of the end, really, of the English monarchical system. There were kings reinstalled after Cromwell, but Parliament had more power after Cromwell. and Cromwell is a sort of an ugly blot on the history of England. And we find today across the world, we're finding a similar sort of a trend running in other countries, running in the direction of authoritarianism. And we can look at different situations. We can look at Russia. I mean, Russia is an obvious example. But look at Turkey. Turkey under Erdogan has moved distinctly in the direction of more authoritarianism and more loyalty to required loyalty to Erdogan. And the free press in particular has been under attack, and the media has been under attack in Turkey. But a country that has received lots of attention from the right in America, and is led by a fellow named Viktor Orban, the country of Hungary. And in Hungary, there's been an ongoing movement, a distinct movement led by Orban in the direction of creating a much more authoritarian government. And for some reason, Viktor Orban is sort of a darling of the right. He's come and he spoke to some conservative conventions here in the United States. And he's viewed by the right as being maybe sort of a heroic figure in terms of what he's doing to the government in Hungary. But what he's doing to the government in Hungary is kind of frightening. And most of the European Union is actually quite upset, and there's been a good deal of debate within the European Union about what it is that should be done about Hungary, since they seem to be violating so much in the way of civil liberties and operating in opposition to the general tenets of democracy that's a basis for the countries in the European Union. So Orban has been attacking the media, the freedom of the media. He's weakened the judicial independence, attacked judges, attacked courts, attempted to nominate and appoint the judiciary that would be loyal to him. He's undermined the checks and balances of the government there. And he created a hybrid form of democracy that's a blend of authoritarianism and democracy. And I would argue that it's very much like what is currently being discussed on the right as illiberal democracy. And we can talk about that briefly when we come back. But illiberal democracy is the basis for the Project 2025 document. And it's even, without being labeled that, discussed in Project 2025. And the most important element of Project 2025, the one they talk about most, is the strengthening of the White House, the establishment within the White House of the capacity to micromanage the rest of the government. And their reasoning is that the president is the only elected official in the executive arm. And because he's the elected official, he's speaking with the voice of the people. And therefore, the voice of the people, they say, should have every reason to be regulating every aspect of what goes on in the executive branch. And so their Project 2025 contemplates creating a government that is capable at the White House level of micromanaging all the departments, micromanaging the Department of Justice, micromanaging the FBI, micromanaging the U.S. Attorney offices around the country, micromanaging the EPA, making sure that no rule gets adopted, no person gets prosecuted for a criminal violation. Nothing is done by the government that doesn't pass muster in the White House. What does that sound like? And how will that feel? We'll talk more about that when we come back. Don't punish me with brutality. Come on, talk to me. You can see what's going on.
We're airing a game right now, but stay here on the stream for more Civic Media news, talk, and more.
The John and Gordy Show.
The clipping sound you heard was all of global allies cutting their cables that connect to the American intelligence network.
For the Republican Party to submit themselves to Vlad Putin is just, you must be able to see Ronald Reagan's corpse underneath his grave because it's just turned to clear glass because he's been spinning so fast and melted it.
Weekday mornings 6 till 8 on 92.7 WMDX and the Civic Media app.
not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Matt Nair on air.
And we are here with Matt Randolph, Mr. Global. Donald Trump now will be coming in for a second term. There has been talk of removing sanctions from Russia. What would that mean, Matt, for the oil and gas industry?
So it depends on what Russia does, but we've seen nothing to suggest that they want to have anything to do with lowering oil prices.
And so the prices are essentially going to stay the same.
In all likelihood, yes.
Matt Nair on air, weekdays at 11 on 92.7 WMDX and the Civic Media app.
The first time seeing my son, I feel like my life did a 180. He really a definition of like why he loves somebody.
Through all of fatherhood's firsts, never stop being a dad. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Download the free Civic Media app today at civicmedia.us.
Good morning. You don't have London on the radio. This is the Earl Ingram Show. Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram. It's a little bit of God Save the King. It's a song we escaped in 1776. But I'm playing it today because I'm talking about the extent to which it sort of feels like what's happening in Washington right now is not just the assembly of a cabinet, but the assembly of a court. Okay, and the characteristics of a court, we talked about it in the first segment, but the characteristics of the members of a court tended to be the rich, the noble, but the extremely loyal. Okay, a condition to being a courtier and having all the favors of the king was to, in exchange for that, to be loyal to the blood, to the king, and loyalty apparently is obviously one of the primary characteristics that's being sought after in the current cabinet. We talked a bit before as well about the trends around the world towards moving governments in the direction of authoritarianism. Talked about the key indicators of authoritarianism that has been, in many respects, I think, duplicated by what's going on here. I mean, you can look at the playbook for authoritarianism, the centralization of power in the executive branch, exactly what's called for in Project 2025. The marginalization of opposition, the claim of rigged elections or the rigging of elections, the attacks on the independent hostile media and the attempt to denigrate and to devalue the media and to have it lose its credibility. The increased use of state violence, meaning arresting protesters or cracking down on unpopular ethnic or other kinds of minorities, and populist rhetoric, where the leader claims to be saving the people, being the only legitimate defender of the national sovereignty, to save the government, to save the culture, to be the protector of the cultural identity. You know, what does that sound like? I mean, that sounds in so many ways like the last campaign and what was being argued on the right. And then we were, I think, before the break, talking about what's going on around the country, and in particular, I think Viktor Orban of Hungary, and how it is that Viktor Orban seems to have become a darling of the conservatives here in America, the conservative movement in America. He's spoken, I think, the Heritage Foundation supported him to come and give a speech. And he's talked about a great deal from the right, and seems to be revered in some fashion. Donald Trump talks about him a lot and calls him a great leader. But most of the people in the European Union, the other leaders in the European Union, are sort of appalled by what it is that's happening in Hungary and what Viktor Orban is orchestrating in the way of a shift from a democratic regime to something that is much more like an authoritarian regime. And we can, when we delve into Project 2025 and we see what it's asking for, which is basically the creation of this White House that is populated by a large number of operatives, people who are then capable of micromanaging the rest of federal government, micromanaging the EPA, micromanaging the Department of Justice. First of all, a big part of that that's required is that you have cabinet officials who fill the cabinet jobs in each of those places, who are absolutely loyal to the White House and will implement the policies of the White House. You then also create within the White House the capability of watching over that. One of the things that Project 2025 calls for in the first 40 pages of it is the creation of an Office of Personnel that allows the incoming president to fire as many people in the federal government as can be fired legally by the White House. And that number is easily 5,000 personnel, but it looks like it could be as large as 15,000 heads that could roll. And then those jobs would all have to be refilled. The refilling of those jobs would be carried out under a loyalty test to the White House and its policies and to its leader. And the problem with that kind of a structure for the government, if that's really the way the government's going to operate, when a Republican gets elected, 15,000 heads roll, and now you have a whole bunch of new people who have to get the jobs have to get filled, and they implement a set of policies. Well, what happens if the American public decides they don't like those policies, and 4 years later they elect a Democrat? 15,000 heads roll, and now we have the pendulum swinging, not just further and further, but faster and faster, in a manner that is highly destabilizing. So the fact is that the only way this kind of centralized government can work and be stable is if that central leader is there for a long time. You can't switch leaders every 4 years and have a government that gets unfolded and refolded every 4 years, that has policies that swing from all the way to the left to all the way to the right every 4 years. That would be so destabilizing. It would destroy our economy. It would destroy our capacity to have business planning. It would destroy our capacity to plan personally our futures. And so what's really implicitly required under the Project 2025 concept of the American government, with the White House micromanaging everything, is a president who is president for longer than 4 years. Longer probably than 8 years. It's one of the reasons why authoritarian regimes last a long time, is that it's kind of required that they last a long time under the procedures that are set up where a strong man runs the whole show. And so I think people talk about authoritarianism, and those on the right would say that this is hysteria. What are you talking about? But I think we need to watch in the world. I think we can watch history, and we can say that, look, we're all human beings. We all suffer from the foibles of human nature. And when you hand someone the capacity to have all that power, the likelihood is that they might grab it. And if they grab it, what's the outcome from that? We'll talk more about this when we return.
News, talk, community, and local sports. Thanks for listening to Civic Media.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin.
Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. It's now in the hands of the state Supreme Court. Wisconsin's highest judiciary will decide the fate of the state's 1849 abortion law. Here's Judith Ruiz Branch.
A circuit court determined last year that an 1849 law doesn't apply to medically consented abortions in Wisconsin. The high court heard arguments Monday about whether a 1985 state law overrides the older one, allowing abortions before the point at which a fetus could survive outside the womb. Jenny Higgins, professor of obstetrics and gynecology at the University of Wisconsin at Madison, says returning to the status quo would mean a dire landscape for abortion access.
Even though abortion is technically available at clinics in Wisconsin right now, it's heavily restricted because of insurance and Medicaid prohibitions. People have to pay out of pocket for a service that should be covered by insurance.
Abortion access disproportionately affects those who are already the most marginalized, Higgins says. She notes while people from all walks of life may find themselves needing abortion care, factors like poverty and racism make it much harder for some to achieve reproductive autonomy compared to those with more economic and social resources.
Those effects make it much harder for folks to be able to access contraceptive care, be in relationships that are stable and healthy and communicative, be able to see past the end of the day, right, into one's future, if you are, again, sort of focused mostly on your own economic scarcity or figuring out how to feed your kids or figuring out how not to get evicted.
For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. If the Academy Awards have any meaning at all, they will nominate Denis Villeneuve for Best Director for Dune 2. Those are the words of actor Josh Brolin, who seems serious, adding he might quit acting altogether if his friend is not nominated for Best Director. Yeah, me too. The first Dune received 10 Oscar nominations in 2022, but not for Best Director, which obviously does not sit well with the No Country for Old Men actor. Thespians do tend to be a bit dramatic, but I hope Brolin doesn't quit acting. He's pretty good at it. Those of you who are shower indifferent, love camping in mud, and would like a shot at a serious injury might be interested to know that headliners for 2025's Coachella have been announced. Lady Gaga, Green Day, Post Malone, and Travis Scott will perform, and there will be an appearance by Yo Gabba Gabba. Can't hardly wait to not attend. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media is your spot for sports. From updates on your favorite teams, live broadcasts of the Packers, Badgers, Brewers, and Bucks, and local sports coverage in your community, we've got everything you need. Find a station near you at civicmedia.us or download the free app today. We'll have more news and talk coming up here on Civic Media's stream.
The Todd Alba Show.
Zomers, are you a Netflix and chill guy?
Do you know what Netflix and chill means?
I thought it just meant watch something on Netflix together.
You say that's what you're going to do, but you're really having them over there for sex.
This is why nobody wants to come to my place anymore. I say, hey, you want to come over and have Netflix and chill? People keep saying, well, no, I don't think so. I'll take it back. And I just thought they were being rude.
I do have Netflix, though.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
Good morning. The Earl Ingram Show. Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram. Playing music here today about the King of America, since I think some of us have a concern or a fear that that's what we're hatching, or that's at least what someone would like us to be hatching. You can call in. The call-in number is 855-752-4842. We'd like to hear from you. Talking this morning about how much it feels like what's happening in Washington right now is not just the assembly of the cabinet, but the putting together of the king's court, you know, the courtiers, and the people that are being appointed to the cabinet in so many ways feel like courtiers. They're many of them billionaires themselves, wealthy, gadflies, people who are social gadflies, media gadflies, people in who primarily, the primary thing they have is a strong personal loyalty to Donald Trump, not necessarily a long history of being a Republican, but a history of being extremely loyal to Donald Trump. I thought we should maybe look at this court that he's putting together, and who are these courtiers, and what kind of danger do they pose? Because after being someone who's